Peter Ungern conducting the Royal Scottish National Orchestra in Short Ride in a Fast Machine by John Adams.
Tomorrow afternoon, Radio 3 brings you two intriguing programmes. On the lunchtime concert, David Grauzammer contrasts Domenico Scarlatti and John Cage, piano and prepared piano, live from Wigmore Hall at 1 o'clock. Then your chance to experience the excitement of the inaugural concert from the Elbphilharmonie in Hamburg on Afternoon on 3 at 2 o'clock. Join us for just another extraordinary Monday afternoon on BBC Radio 3.
It's a little after 9 o'clock now this Sunday evening, and time for Drama on Three. This week, BBC Radio 3 is marking 100 years since the birth of Anthony Burgess, with a season of programmes, Burgess at 100. One of the best-known English literary figures of the 20th century, Anthony Burgess was a prolific novelist, composer, translator, screenwriter, teacher, linguist, critic and poet. His version of Oedipus the King receives its UK debut here on Radio 3 tonight, with music performed by the BBC Philharmonic and the Cantos Chamber Choir. Before the drama, the writer A.L. Kennedy introduces the piece, which contains songs in a hitherto lost Burgess language.
In 1972, Anthony Burgess's adaptation of Sophocles' play Oedipus Rex was staged at the Tyrone Guthrie Theatre, Minneapolis, for the first and last time. At that point in his career, Burgess was living in Italy, writing a flurry of novels, poems, musical works and criticism. The play was developed through a transatlantic collaboration between Burgess, Michael Langham, the Guthrie's dynamic director, and Obie Award-winning composer Stanley Silverman, whose score you will hear tonight. Burgess was fascinated by how the Sphinx's childishly simple puzzle could have such dire consequences for a mighty king and his nation. His Oedipus was a complex, angry man whose drive towards oblivion is predicated on his own unswerving dedication to uncovering the truth at any cost. Burgess wanted to bring out the dreadful paradigm of Oedipus. He saw him as a criminal, but also a saint. In other words, he is a tragic hero. The production, with its accessible modern dialogue and unusual score, was very well received and then disappeared. The script was published, but with one significant omission, the invented language. Burgess had created a unique Indo-European vocabulary specifically for the ritual chants in the piece. He was loath to commit it to posterity in print, as he didn't want its analysis to overshadow the drama. The handwritten score, with the only record of this invented language, is held at the International Anthony Burgess Foundation in Manchester and was recreated specially for this drama on three by Silverman and the production team. Burgess is famous for inventing words, from Clockwork Orange to The Quest for Fire. Tonight, Radio 3 hosts the UK debut of a lost Burgess language.
Thank you. Guilt. 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 Priests, speak out our guilt.
Sons and daughters of the city-state of Thebes, I was ready for the voice of your supplication. I do not cling to my kingly right of hearing the city's wrong through messengers. Messengers distill, abstract, smooth over. Avoiding violent speech, they do violence to the truth. And there is a truth here that will not yield to words. It is in the ears and nostrils, a stench of decay, countered in vain by your incense, groans undrowned by holy hymns. I, Oedipus, whom men have called the great, come not to you now in greatness but in humility, as the city's servant to hear. Hear what? You elders, speak for the rest. If it is sickness, my physicians await. If it is simple need, my granaries are open. Before you even ask, I spend pity, dispense compassion.
Ruler of our country, I, a priest of Zeus, I and my fellow priests, at the shrine of Pallas, at the temple where the oracle speaks in fire, have done sacrifice, have prayed, have led others in prayer, crowned with garlands of supplication, hair, and garments torn all over Thebes.
Your subjects wail, wonder, ask why of the gods. You have seen it yourself already, our city thrashing, heaving, reeling in shipwreck, scarcely able to thrust its prow up from the surge of blood.
A blight is on our fields, and on the cattle of our fields. A blight lies on our women. What children they bear are dead or deformed. The fire is struck. A god that carries fire worries our roofs. We grow poor while death grows rich.
Oedipus, we have not come to you as one goes to a god. You are no more than a man, though our first of men. But we remember how you came one day and saved this city. You freed us from the tribute which we paid in blood and bones to the Sphinx, the Lion Woman with her cruel song, her riddle, which you alone could answer.
It was said, and it is said still, that what you did through God's aid, that God shone over you then. I and others believe that God walks with you now.
Though some say God nods in a chair behind you, or has his chin on your shoulder dozing, and that you must shake him awake.
Oedipus, give us your strength now.
If you are to be our king, be king of the living, not of dead stone and empty air. A city is a ship only when men possess them. King of nothingness. There is no kingship there.
Need I tell my grief, my brothers, my children? I know what you suffer. You suffer, yes, but none suffers more than I. For each of you is confined to his own grief. But I bear the intolerable weight of yours, and that of all my people. I am not blind, I am not asleep. Sleep, indeed, is a rare visitant. For tears oppress me, and the wide night is a labyrinth I tread, with no thread of useful thought to lead me to the light. But I have done a little more than weep and wander in a circle of thought. There was, is, a source of hope, and I sought it. The Lord Creon, brother of my queen, has been sent to the shrine of Golden Apollo, there to seek of the oracle what word or deed of mine may help you, may help us all. Yet he was due to return before sunrise, according to his undertaking. Watch for him. Give me news of his approach. Upon my honor as a king and a man, all that the god enjoins shall be done, shall be promptly done.
Well spoken. Well spoken.
Tell us about the Sphinx! Tell us about the Sphinx!
You've heard the story too often.
The Sphinx. She is so far back in the past as to seem a mere fable. A fairy tale ogre to frighten infants. But she existed. Her body was a lion's body.
Her face, the face of a virgin girl. And she was eagle-winged.
She ravaged our country, roaring up to the unwary wanderer in a swirl of dust.
To any she met, she put a riddle. None could ever answer it.
Then she would leap on the ignorant one and eat him.
What was the riddle?
You know the riddle. You all know the riddle.
Bear with the child. Bear with the children. They all love to hear it and answer it. Each of them gains that way a little of the substance of Oedipus.
Very well, then. Which animal walks on four legs in the morning, two legs at noon, and three legs in the evening?
I know.
Me. The animal is man. As a baby, he crawls on all fours. In the noon of his life, he walks upright on two legs. And in old age or evening, he walks with a stick. It's an easy riddle.
Easy or not? Not one could solve it, except our king. Trudging toward our city, a stranger, unknown, seeking his fortune, he met the Sphinx and answered the unanswerable. In chagrin, she killed herself. Our scourge was gone. And as a reward, Oedipus, our lord, gained the crown and the hand of our widowed queen.
And yet, it's an easy riddle.
The point about the riddle was that it was unanswerable. Difficult or easy, that was never the point. The riddle was unanswered because it was unanswerable.
Why?
He is coming. Creon is coming. Call the king. Creon is smiling. The news is good.
He's crowned his head with ripe berries of the bay tree. The news must be good.
Welcome to our royal brother, Creon. The times, our agony, your mission, all forbid the delay of a private audience, a public announcement to follow. It is in the presence of the people you must deliver what comes from God's mouth. Tell us then, is it good or bad news?
Good news. Or shall I say that good may come even from what seems evil, if things go right?
But the answer, what was the answer?
May I speak before all?
The plight is theirs. They have first right to an answer.
This, then, is what Phoebus Apollo, our lord, said and commanded. There is something unclean that was born and nourished on our soil, and now corrupts and makes filthy our soil. It is destroying us. It must be driven away, or must itself be destroyed.
This is another riddle. What unclean thing? What manner of expulsion or destruction?
The unclean thing is a man. The god decrees the banishment of a man, or else, or also, the shedding of blood. From the shedding of blood comes our city's agony, our city's peril. Blood calls for blood, he says. Blood must be paid with blood, or with banishment, or both.
What blood does he mean? Whose blood was shed?
Before you took the throne that I as regent offered to the slayer of the Sphinx, we were ruled by King Laius.
I know of Laius, though I never knew him. He died. That was why the throne was empty.
Laius was killed. The meaning of the god's command is that the unknown killer of Laius be made known. Made known, be brought to justice.
But how is that possible? Where would that murderer be? It is so long ago. How can we hope to trace those buried footprints now? There was a murder, and that murder grows to a fable, like the Sphinx herself. Where can we even begin to look?
Here, the god said. Seek. There is no doubt that all will be found out. If blood is not sought, blood will not be bought.
When I took the crown from your hands, I knew you mourned a dead king. But I have never yet inquired into the precise manner of his death. Was it here at home, or on the field of battle, or abroad on the soil of the stranger that he met this death, this violent death?
Laius set forth on a holy pilgrimage to some distant shrine, some distant god. And from that day of his leaving, he was distant forever. We never saw him again.
Oh, did no word come back from fellow traveler, from retinue, from any who saw what happened?
There were servants with Laius. All died. All were killed with him, except one who fled the carnage in terror. He had nothing to tell. Nothing for certain, except for one thing.
Well, one thing would be something, a clue, pointing to other clues.
This man's story was that a band of robbers, not one robber but many, fell on the king's party and slew them.
Robbers? It seems unlikely. To kill a king? Unless they were under high orders, orders from here, high money, protection from on high.
This too was thought of. But there was much to harass us, too much trouble in the state to seek out the murderers or the arch-murderer behind them.
Is that possible? Surely no trouble in the state could be so great as to hinder a state inquiry into a royal death, a royal murder.
You forget the Sphinx. You who slew the Sphinx and delivered us. The Sphinx was very much alive in those days. She took up all our attention.
We will start. As from now, we will seek to bring everything to light that has been too long hidden. All thanks to you, Lord Creon, And all praise to Phoebus Apollo for telling us what our duty is to the dead. Be sure, you will find me untiring in this cause. God's cause, our country's cause. My own cause also, since it is from myself as well as my subjects that this stain must be cleaned away. After all, the killer of Laius, secure in his ability to kill a king and go unpunished because undetected, might he not, whoever he is, turn against this king? Serving the cause of Laius, I serve myself. People of Thebes, there is nothing I will not do to douse the fire, to smite the demons, deliver our city with Apollo's help from the blood that is bred of blood. Now let me enjoin you, the faithful, to show your faith. Pray to the gods for guidance, revelation, the lifting of this curse, that they may bless you is my own prayer. I take my leave.
Oedipus, Oedipus King. Solver of riddles, slayer of monsters. Find out the monster that killed a king. Answer this riddle, unwind the tangled string.
The city of light from out of the gold. Shrine of the golden god, the word has come. It is not a word of deliverance that is told. Fear cleaves our hearts, fear renders us dumb.
We tremble. We shake in pain. Phoebus, Phoebus, shine out. Strike. We tremble. Alas, alas, we shake. Artemis, beloved sister, follow, follow. Conquer.
Tres amos, tre amos, cormo, Phoebus, Phoebus, ve, ve.
Bacchus, see our pain. Chase, strike, beat him. We cry, cut, strike, conquer.
Artemis, vezor, prios, ek, ve,
empty of life.
The ship is beached, its wood rotting.
Rotten.
Prepos de castit, soyete, soyete, stenen, stenen de castit, soyete, soyete.
Prayed, and your prayers will be answered if you will but hear my words and obey them. A remedy is at hand, and we must put it in hand. Listen to me now with close attention. Though your king, I am in many ways a stranger especially to the story of Laius's death as much as to the black deed itself. I need a beginning, a fact. the start of the thread which will lead me through the labyrinth. Therefore, a citizen speaking to his fellow citizens, I ask you, Thebans, if any of you knows, if any of you thinks that he knows who the murderer of Laius was or is, let him speak. Let him declare the truth fully to me, in public or in secrecy, if he wishes. Let me say more. If any man's conscience is guilty, he may give himself up without fear. His fate will be instant banishment, no more. He who was merciless shall know the taste of mercy. Or if it was some foreigner you know to have been the assassin, declare this openly. The informant shall be rewarded, not only with thanks, but let me speak plainly. If one among you is found to be hiding himself or another in fear, in lack of faith in my clemency, I here pronounce his sentence. Whoever he be, I forbid him shelter in my land. The hand of human friendship, the comfort of religion, of prayer or sacrifice, or the right to the lustral rites of cleansing. I hereby excommunicate him. He shall be totally homeless, friendless, godless, cursed, and unclean. I follow the divine oracle in this, doing my duty to the god as well as to the dead. And I pray in all solemnity that the unknown murderers and his accomplices, if accomplices there be, shall wear the badge of shame, the brand of infamy, on the very skin to life's end, world's end. I seek no royal exemption from this curse. If, in full knowledge, I have harbored in house, on hearth, this man of blood, then on my head lie the evil and the consequences of the evil. We have, all of us, a duty to see that these duties to the god, to our suffering country, be faithfully carried out. A stranger in so many ways. I'm a stranger in my failure to understand why, when he died, your late king, there were no voluntary acts of purification. Acts unprompted by the gods, I mean. So good a king. His death went by with no more perturbation in the state than might be occasioned to the death of a beggar. I cannot understand why the most rigorous inquiries were not undertaken. So good a king. But enough of this. I stand in his place, having inherited not only his crown, but his bed. His dear wife, now my dear wife. Had there been children of his, they would have been a further bond of blood between us. But there are enough bonds. His cause is mine. I will fight for him as I would fight for my own father. No corner of the labyrinth shall lack the probing of light till the light bring forth the slayer of Laius.
Laius, the son of Labdacus, the son of Polydorus, the son of Cadmus, the son of Agenor. The curse of the gods light on all who disobey our royal charge. May the earth be empty of seed for them, and empty of seed the women they lie with. May the curse of heaven pursue them to the gates of hell.
Thank you.
I speak, King Oedipus, but only to ask, if the god Apollo said so much, why cannot he say more?
I do not quite...
If asked, would not the god say who the murderer is?
One does not ask again. The god's silence would be a rebuke and a new disappointment. There is no path there.
I have another thing, a second thought.
Second, third. Let me have them all.
Tiresias. I was thinking of Tiresias. He, it is said, stands nearest to Phoebus Apollo.
So they say, and for that reason...
He surely could help more than any in the state.
For that reason, I say, he has been sent for. It was on Creon's advice. I stress the urgency. He should be here now to meet me.
A bundle of myths. And very old. And very irritable. The divine fire burned out his eyes and killed his manhood. He was believed to have seen the goddess Athena bathing. A deadly sin, and he lost his sight for it. Or so some say. Some say that the gods took pity and gave him in recompense the power of prophecy.
He has another gift too, they say. Unless it was really a calamity of birth.
You mean he is both man and woman? Who knows? He is past the pleasures of both, though he may suffer with both. There. See the suffering. See the irritability.
Tiresias, it was good of you to come. We know, the whole world knows, that there is nothing beyond your sphere of knowledge. In your heart, if not in your eyes, you see the wretched state of our city. Only you can help us. You may not have heard that we sent to Apollo for the guidelines of help, and Apollo answered. The only way of deliverance from the plague that has struck us is to find the murderer of Laius. Sir, your gifts are great. You have worked in all the modes of divination, scrying, astrology, probing the entrails of birds. Save us. Save yourself. You too are of Thebes. Show us the way of cleansing. To help man is the noblest work of man.
Very wise words. But when knowledge brings no profit to the wise, knowledge is a mode of suffering. Why did I forget this? I, who knew it so well. It was useless to send for me. I should never have come.
This is no help.
Let me go home. It will be easier, believe me, for you to bear your suffering, me mine.
You are great in Thebes, but you show yourself no friend of Thebes if you refuse to answer. Son of Thebes, it is the king of Thebes who speaks to you.
I refuse to answer, yes. Refuse, because your words tend to no good, so I guard my own.
You know something, yet you refuse to speak. Oh, well, let this king be a beggar and beg again.
Beg in vain. I will not divulge my heavy secrets. Your heavy secrets you sin by asking.
More riddles. All I take your words to mean is that you know and will not tell. All I take your intention to mean is that you will fail us. See with your blind eyes the city perish.
I wish to spare you. I will tell nothing more.
Oh, nothing? This is insolence. You would lash a heart of stone to anger. I command you to speak.
Things will be as we shall see. Though I hide all, all must come to light. You need no prophet to tell you this.
What fate will bring to birth, it is your art or trade to know this and to say it. Practice your trade.
Prepare what new rage you will. You, whose great fault is rage. I will say no more.
If you want more rage, you shall have it. I speak openly. I believe that you had some hand in the plot to kill a king. If you had eyes, I would say that those eyes instructed the hand. I say that in your darkness, murder coiled and writhed.
Very well, then. You have stung me out of silence. Here. On your head, let fall the curse that fell from your own lips. You are excommunicate. Cut off from men. Speak no more to me or any. It is you. You who are the defiler of this land.
You dare to say this? You... You think you can escape
the... I have already escaped. The truth is my door.
But it is treason. Who put you up to this?
You were the instigator. What I said, you made me say. It is against my will.
Say it again. Say what you said against your will.
It was plain enough.
Say it loud. I will know it beyond all doubt. Say it once more.
I say that the murderer you seek is yourself.
Madman.
It is your voice that grows to the voice of a madman. But now I have started. At your request. At your order. Remember that. Will you hear more?
Oh, spew all your madness out. Fly to the limits of treason. Say all you know.
This I know. This you do not know. Your marriage is a sin. Your love is a sin. Your bed is stained with sin.
Impunity. You think your blindness and age grant you...
The truth grants it. I am merely bearer of the truth.
Do not threaten me, you who live in the dark. My throne is of rock.
Rocks? Your throne rocks? No. I admit I cannot harm you, but the gods can. Apollo can.
Apollo? Creon? It is Creon, then. Creon, his idea, not yours.
Creon is not your enemy. You are your own.
The shadow of success is always envy. It is the scorpion over the royal bed, the headache under the crown. Creon, my friend, trusted so long, standing in the shadow. Is it possible? I took the crown from his hand, a crown unsought by me, freely given by him, and now is it possible? He sets this cheating monger of magic onto me. The light of cupidity in the blind eyes. You, sir! I call your craft into question. That famous gift was notably lacking when the Sphinx fled on Theban flesh. That riddle which none could answer save I. Oh, surely a seer, a prophet, a special being walking under the equivocal canopy of the gods. Surely he should have answered it. Oh, but the stars were silent. The lees in the wine cup yielded no pattern. The flight of the bird spelled nothing. I, Oedipus, ignorant Oedipus, gave the answer and stopped the riddler's mouth forever. I, Oedipus, whom you would now dispossess to feel in your blindness the embossed gold of a royal counselor's chair. Tiresias, though blind, the seeing eye of Creon. Make no mistake, you shall regret this. Creon shall regret it. To make me, your king, the sacrificial goat, such impiety to the gods, such treason.
I accept that you wear the crown and stand above me, but I claim no less than what you claim. The right of speech. Moreover, it was more out of courtesy that I came than from a subject's duty. I am not your subject. Apollo is my master. Him I serve. Nor is Creon my patron. You mock my blindness. First, think of your own. You have eyes that can see and will not. You shut them to your own state of sin and impending damnation. Ask yourself whose son you are. Consider that. A man sins no less for being blind to his sin. The curse of a father and a mother will yet send you packing from this palace and from this land. Then you shall be blind. Like me. Believe me. You, who use your voice to decry Creon and myself, you shall be struck dumb, yet before you find the air for lamentation, you shall be stamped into the ground, but you shall not nourish the earth.
I have stood enough. Had I known what slanderous madness I was to listen to, I would have spared us both the trouble.
You talk of my madness. It is not the word your father would have used.
Would have used? My father lives.
Today you find your father. Today, you are born. Today, you die.
Riddles. I'm sick of riddles.
Strange words from a man whose pride lay in solving them. But as you shall learn, what was your pride must be your ruin.
Ruin? Ruin? Let us think of the city's ruin. I saved it once. I will again. I am Oedipus.
And I am going. This is the last time you will see my face. The rest of you will see and will remember. Remember these words. This is the man you seek. The killer of Laius. He passes for a stranger, but as he will know to his cost, he is Theban-born. He came here seeing. He shall go blind. He is rich now, but will soon beg his bread. A stick shall tap his way into exile. Where he enters, he once came out. For the ones he loves, new names are needed. Names against nature. Sphinx names. He laid his father low to sleep in his bed. Remember these things. Blind, you called me. You will not call me blind when you learn to see. And when you learn to see, it is you. You. Who will be blind?
Out of the rock of golden Apollo, a voice calls. Where is the slayer? Where is the doer of a deed without a name? Phoebus, sweet singer, golden harp player, strike strings no longer. Follow, follow, with swift wings, with avenging flame.
The hunt is up. A man in hiding skulks in caves, roams the wood, lonely as the mountain lion or the wild ox. Cut off from kindliness, bereft of good. In every shadow his pursuers are striding. He whimpers through the snow like a maned fox.
Tiresias the prophet has unleashed terror into our darkness. But darkness it remains. We lack knowledge, but we do not lack fear.
We ask and hear no answer, beating our brains.
Soothsayers are so often the sayers of error.
Surely it was ghastly error that was spoken here.
The gods know all, but men know so little. Even the greatest of prophets.
Prove blame on our king, and then we will believe.
We stand aghast. Aghast at the frail and brittle fabric of accusation we watched him weave with sure fingers in his blindness.
But can that shame really attached to our king, whose goodness is a flame, whose wisdom is wonder?
We will wonder and not grieve, unbelieving that the deed without a name came from his hand, continuing to proclaim his goodness, wisdom, trumpeting his fame.
Citizens of Thebes, I am told that the king, King Oedipus, has laid a most serious and slanderous accusation against me. To think that he should harbor such a thought. The thought that I have sought his harm in word or act. I do not wish to live in the odor of such scandal. If you, my friends, the voice and ears of my country, are, like him, ready to cry treason, then I will end it now. A life already too long.
My Lord Creon, our king is distressed. Take it that his words were spoken in an anger so great, it seized on the first object, one close to him, one dear to him.
Enough of that. Did he say what I heard that he said? That under my prompting, the prophet Tiresias lied?
I must admit that he cried out in those terms, but with what intention I cannot say.
Was the accusation clear and unequivocal?
Who am I to say more of the deeds or words of our master? He has heard you. Let him speak.
You, sir, you have the effrontery to stand in the shadow of my door, brazening it all out, pretending sanctimonious shock, as I heard and now see, when you are the proved plotter against my life, the foiled thief of my crown. Do you take me for a fool or a coward? Or one lacking eyes like your precious senile confederate? How could you hope to succeed without powerful friends or the backing of the people? Oh, yes, money. Money wins thrones when talent and virtue fail, when talent and virtue are lacking.
You cannot know what you're saying. Listen, I have a right to be heard.
I have a right to justice.
Judge when I've spoken.
Quick to speak and, as I know, eloquent. You cannot cloud in words what you are, an enemy. Bitter and cunning, with the claws of dispossession ready to strike.
First, let me say...
Anything you will, except that you're not guilty.
Tell me, I've a right to know the precise nature of the harm I'm supposed to have done you.
Was it you, or was it not you, who persuaded me to send for that prophetic humbug, that canting mumbler?
If you mean Tiresias, yes. And I would do it again.
Doubtless. Now then, tell me, how long ago is it that Laius, King Laius...
Laius? What has Laius to do with it?
How long is it since Laius disappeared, died, was murdered?
That you should know. Common knowledge. A little longer ago than your crowning, your marriage. The event's a year older than your eldest child.
Was Tiresias at his profession then?
He was an honored prophet, as honored as now.
In those days, did he ever mention me?
Not to my knowledge.
Was there no inquest into the king's death? No search for his body?
We inquired. We searched. There was nothing.
And why was our professional wise man, our state soothsayer, so silent then?
I don't know.
You don't know? But there is something that you know, and you'd be wise to confess it now.
I will always confess what I know. What do I know?
This. That Tiresias would not have said to my very face, that I was the murderer of Laius if you, sir, had not prompted him.
If he said that, you know best that he said it. But since you've pounded questions at me, give me leave to ask you something.
Ask all you wish. You will never prove me guilty of Laius' murder.
Leave that. Answer this. Are you my sister's husband?
You know I am.
Is she your equal partner in the rule and revenue of the kingdom?
This you know too.
Do I share your honor? Am I an equal partner?
Yes, you are. And being so, you are all the more a traitor.
I deny it. And I could be hot in the denial. I could counter rage. But I prefer reason. I have royal rank, royal honor. But I lack one thing I am glad to lack. I mean, the unquiet head of a king, the specious glint of the crown. I do not wish to be king. What more could it give me? Certainly, my sleep would be uneasier. The night shadows more full of menace. No. I have what I want. Royalty and rule, unqualified by the final responsibility. Who would seek to exchange this comfortable life for yours that is so comfortless? Treason. If you want treason, look elsewhere for it. Among men who grope for power, I have power. All you need do, you on whose face doubt rides unslowed by reason, is to go yourself to the shrine of Apollo. Ask if the message I brought back was the message given. Do that first. but I will not be charged in this manner. On suspicion, on blind suspicion, you, sir, are guilty of two crimes. The first is little compared with the other. It is this dreary crime of slander, but the other crime is inexcusable in a king. The crime of mistaking a good man for a bad. Throw away a friend, and you throw away your own life. Time teaches this, but the lesson is a long and slow one. Years prove the good man. The evil man is known in a single day.
I pride myself on quickness. I was quick with the Sphinx when slowness earned others' death. I am quick at countering quick treason. What must I do? Wait till I am in the net and the rope tightens.
Be quick, then, with your condemnation. What will you do with me? Banish me, Oedipus?
Now, no banishment. Death. Quick death.
Think! Be a king. Show me the wrongs I'm said to have done or be doing.
I know I am right.
In your own knowledge. Not in the knowledge of the gods or of reasonable men. Not in mine.
You are a traitor.
And if I'm not, if you are wrong...
Kings must rule.
Not if they rule unjustly.
Do you hear this, Thebes? My city.
Your city? Is she not my city too?
With respect, sirs, this is enough. You need a woman's calm. Now you will get it. The queen.
Is this a time to shout out private grievances? You should be ashamed. Come inside. Creon, go home. There are larger issues to engage our passions. Must I remind you?
None larger than this. Your husband here, Queen Jocasta, our lord the king, is engaged in condemning me to death.
It is true. He is guilty of plotting against my life.
He will not cease in his wild accusations. I, Jocasta, the easy living who shuddered in your widowhood when I feared the crown must come to me.
Believe him, Oedipus. Believe him for your own sake. For all our sakes.
Listen, O king. Consent. May your anger be spent. Let mercy flower. Why should I relent? Repent of the truth.
Truth, like a flower, blooms for all men. You nourish a sour weed of your own planting.
Do you know what you are saying?
We are saying that Creon swore his friendship, never before showed falsehood, said falseness. The betrayal is your betrayal, on your own head.
Let the breath that carried that word be eaten by the wind. All we say is that we have heard too much in too evil a time. You have sinned, King, in imputing sin. We are sick of the wrangling of princes. Let mercy in.
In asking me to relent, you ask for my own death or my own banishment. If it is your wish that I let him go, then so be it. This may encompass my own end. Nevertheless, I say yes to your plea. But you have no power to quell my hate. I hate him forever.
It is harsh mercy, the other face of anger. You build yourself a cell, cut off from the sun, and furnish it with engines for your own torture.
Out of my sight. Take your leave.
I'm going. Wrapped in a cloak of injustice woven by your hands alone. Wherever I go, I walk in innocence.
Persuade him, Majesty, of the wrong he has done.
How did all this begin?
Surmise, suspicion, calumny, the heat and stress of the time.
Each blamed the other one. How? For what fault?
It is best that we take the story as done. Let us not make more wretched this wretchedness of our own. Best to leave well alone. But talk to him, Majesty.
My
brother banished. Surely I have a right to know the sudden spring of this hatred?
Your brother is your brother, but I am the king. He plotted against me. He put into the mouth of that blind old monger of lies that it was I who murdered Laius.
From his own pretended knowledge or from what others have said?
He kept himself cunningly clean of the accusation, using a soothsayer. Could anything be filthier? More underhand?
You are afraid that this soothsayer, despite all evidence, may have spoken the truth. We're all superstitious before prophets. But your fear is nothing. Prophets see nothing. Prophecies can dismally fail. To Laius, one day, I remember, an oracle uttered a dismal prophecy. It was not the god himself, of course. God forbid I should think such a thing, but one of his most reliable servants. He said that Laius should die at the hands of his own son. A son to be born of Laius and me. But the whole world knows what happened. Laius was killed by robbers, unknown men, at a place where three roads meet. As for our son, there was a son, the prophet was right in that. In fear of the prophecy, the king gave orders. It was a terrible thing to do. I had no part in it, but necessary. I see that it was necessary. Gave orders to pierce the ankles of the child with an iron spike and cast him forth to die on a barren hillside. Laius could be cruel, but he could not directly kill. A winter night was the murderer. The point, though, is this, that the prophecy failed. Laius' son did not kill his father. Prophecies can fail. What God intends, he prefers to show in his own time. Pay no heed to prophets.
My wife, my dear wife, something terrifies me. Something in your words. My mind wanders back, then stops, fearful to look.
Something in my words?
You said that Laius was murdered at a point where three roads meet.
That is the story.
Where is the place, Jocasta? Where did it happen?
Focus. The road divides there, leading to Delphi one way, to Dorlia another.
And the news of his death came when?
As you know, just prior to your coming, your crowning, our marriage. What is it? What is in your mind?
Oh, you got to do this to me?
To do what? What is the trouble, for God's sake?
Laius,
tell me.
Laius, what did he look like?
With tall, graying hair, formed not unlike you.
Is it possible to curse oneself in ignorance?
You frighten me.
I have a sudden fear that that blind man had eyes. Tell me one more thing, then, God help me, I shall know. How was he attended? Laius, King Laius, many officers, many servants, a full retinue.
Only 5 men all told, including a herald. 1 carriage for the king. Those details were clear.
All too clear. Who told you? Who told you all this?
Philoctetes, the one servant who escaped and ran home.
And is he at home still?
No. He returned, shaken, told his story and said little else until you became king. Then he said he could not serve a new master and asked me to let him leave the service of the palace to go back to the fields as a shepherd. I let him go. He was good and trusted. He could have begged a far greater favour, but I granted what he asked.
Is it known where he is? Could he be brought here quickly?
He could. Why do you want him?
I am full of fear. I fear I have spoken too much. I must see him.
See him you shall. But meantime, tell me everything. I am your wife. I have a right to know.
You have the first right. For the first time now, I tell my whole story. Listen, my dear wife, who, God help us both, are, I fear, all too deeply involved. But listen. My father was a Corinthian, King Polybus, and my mother, Merope. I was held by the citizens of Corinth to be their greatest, next to the king. Until one day there was a dinner, and a man who'd been drinking too much suddenly and insolently said that I was a bastard to the man I called father. I was hurt and angry. I went to my parents and told them what had been said, and they were quick to quiet my fears, angry in their turn that such a story should be put about. But the story was put about. Put about widely. I did what I had to do, though without my parents' knowledge. I set out for Delphi, the shrine of Apollo. There I asked. But for the pains of my journey received no answer. Instead, I was given, without asking, some information so wretched, so terrible, I could hardly sustain the telling. For the gods said I was doomed to marry my own mother and bring to the daylight a misbegotten brood, a breed of monsters that men would shun as they shunned the Sphinx. Add to this that I must also kill my father. And there was but one way open to me, never to return to Corinth, never to see father or mother again, so that those ghastly prophecies should never be fulfilled. This is what I did. I started the longest possible journey, and on this journey, I came to that very neighborhood, the place where three roads meet. There I encountered a herald, followed by a carriage with a man in it. A man like the man you've described. This herald, in a surly way, a way unfitted to my rank or indeed to anyone's, ordered me off the road. I refused. Then this venerable one in the carriage joined in with equal surliness. He even offered to thrust me bodily off the road. I became angry and struck the coachman. The old man watched for his moment and, as he passed, leaned out with a two-pronged goad and hit me full on the head. What could I do except seek payment in full for the pain and insult? My stick struck him backwards from his carriage and he fell out. The others attacked me and I... If this was Lais, see then what I have done. Rendered myself hateful to gods and to men. I was born evil. I am utterly unclean, murderer and polluter of my victim's bed. Was it not enough to have to leave my country in wretchedness, never again to see the parents I had at least, have at least, spared from this ultimate horror? Patricide and incest, oh God! May that day not dawn. May I be lost to men's sight forever before that final corruption visits me. But is not this enough? To know I am the murderer of the man whose crown I wear, whose queen I love?
Oedipus, everything depends on the testimony of the man you have still to meet. There is surely still ground for hope.
That is true. I can hope. I can wait in hope for the coming of the shepherd.
But when he comes, what do you want of him?
If his story is of robbers, of highway robbers, more than one, that is the point, a plurality of killers, then I am safe. But if he speaks of a man travelling alone, then the guilt points clearly towards one man who already fears...
But his story of robbers, a plurality of killers, was always his story. A story told and retold, now part of our history. He cannot now go back on it. But even if in some small point he changes it, he will never be able to allay my disbelief, a disbelief I enjoin on you in prophecies. Laius' son, my child, should kill him. That was how it went. But that poor child never lived to kill his father. divination, soothsaying. I would not cross the road to hear any of that nonsense.
You're right. It is nonsense. Let us have hard fact, the record of a simple man's mind. Send for him.
Without delay. Wait, my love, my lord, and rest while you wait. You have need of rest.
Elders of the city, citizens, you must know then that the king suffers from stress and unwholesome fancies. I can do little to heal by either advice or soothing words. He is too much at the mercy of man's speech, no longer it seems able to make sound judgments. These things will pass, but not without help from the gods. Help from the gods I seek, then. First, from you, golden Apollo. Lift our uncleanness. Restore to our ship's master the skill to steer us all to safe haven.
Svete, 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 svete news! Good news! Peace on you, madam, and men of Thebes. I am come from Corinth, seeking the house of Oedipus, with a message for the king himself.
From Corinth, you say?
A message from Corinth. Great news, I may tell you, but tinged with sadness.
Leave the sadness till after. We have enough of our own. What is your good news?
The people of Corinth wish to make Oedipus their king. King of all Isthmus.
But surely Polybus is their king there, unless...
You have hit on the sadness, madam. Huh. Polybus is dead. Old age has claimed him. It was a long, good life. Perhaps sadness is out of place.
Dead? Oedipus's father? Dead of mere age? So much now for your oracles. The father Oedipus fled, fearing to be his murderer. Dead by nature's stroke, not by his. Who again can credit these voices, these distillations through fallible men?
What is this? What news, dearest Jocasta, am I summoned to?
Listen to this gentleman, a royal messenger of your own country. Judge then what all this holy prophesying is worth.
Who is he? What is his message?
A royal officer of the court who says your father, King Polybus, is dead.
Is this true, sir? Let me hear it from your own lips.
This is part of my message, the part you seem most anxious to hear. It is all too true. King Polybus is dead.
By sickness? By man's treachery?
By accident. A small accident can put an old body to sleep.
Of sickness, then?
Sickness and age.
My father. My poor father.
He had had many years.
So, well then, we see, dearest Jocasta, how little trust to repose in booming oracles. In smoke from the sacrificial hearth, from the pattern of the birds screaming over our heads. That solemn prophecy. And now he lies, his body unmarked by any weapon of mine, at peace in his grave. Unless, of course, he died of grief at my absence with an old man's longing to see his son. Does that make me his murderer? No. The oracle spoke of killing, of the shedding of a father's blood. Oracles are not to be trusted. This we know now. We know for certain.
This we knew before. You have forgotten my words.
Indeed, yes. I was misled by fear.
Fear no more.
No more, and yet there is one fear more. My mother lives, sleeps in an empty bed.
And you will dream of your body's imprint upon it. Enough of this. Chance is everything. Foreknowledge, nothing. Best to live in that knowledge, in lack of knowledge. Take the days as they come. Live easy. Dreams have been taken for oracles. If you dream, as many a man has done, of lying with his mother, it is but a memory of lying with her once in babyhood. Put off these imaginings. Let us live.
I would not wish her dead, but Jocasta, while she lives, I travel in fear.
Yet there is some comfort in the hard news of your father's death.
There is a small candle of comfort there, but I still fear the living. I am not safe.
Fear the living, you say, sir? Whom do you fear?
Queen Merope, your queen, widow of Polybus.
She is a danger to you. In what way, danger?
There was this terrible oracle.
Can it be told? Or does some sacred law forbid your divulging it to me, a stranger, though a Corinthian?
It may be told. When I was a younger man, the oracle of Phoebus Apollo said that I must kill my father, lie with my mother. This drove me out of Corinth. I regret nothing. I have married happily, raised a family, known the sweetness of power. Nothing save that long estrangement. It is good to know the embrace of a father, a mother.
The fear, you say, drove you away from Corinth?
Drove me away from the chance of killing my father.
That is all over. As for the other fear, I can make you rest easy.
If you can, you will not find me ungrateful.
Polybus was not your father.
Polybus?
Was not your father.
He was not... Why then did he call me his son? Doubting you now, I wonder whether I should not doubt you on your other news.
Doubt all you will. Truth is truth. It is truth, for instance, that both Polybus and his queen longed for a son but remained childless. If my manner to you seems somewhat more familiar than is fitting, it is because, doubt this too if you wish, because it was from my hands that King Polybus received his son. You were given to him by me.
Given? What was I? Something you bought for a drachma from a family rich in children? Something you found in a gutter?
You were found in a wood. A thicket on the slope of Cithedon.
Found by you?
I was a shepherd then. I became more than a shepherd later.
I cannot understand how a child could come to be exposed. A child unwanted, left to die in the cold. Whose child?
Your ankles had been riveted. Oh. I loosed you. The child's ankles pierced and fettered.
I carry the stigma.
And the stigma is in your name, Oedipus. A man's name always means something, though the something be lost in time.
Who did this to me? My father or my mother? This I must know.
I cannot tell you. But the shepherd who brought you to me, he would know.
So it was not you yourself?
No. I was guarding my flocks. This other shepherd, he was, I remember, called Laius's man.
Laius? Laius? Laius of Thebes?
Why, yes. This man was Laius's own shepherd. Or one of them. The chief kings have large flocks.
Is this man still alive? Could I see him?
Well, this is Thebes. And I live in Corinth. These people would know.
Do any of you indeed know the man he speaks of? An old shepherd, I take him to be. Has he been seen in the city or the pastures outside the city? For God's sake, speak if you know.
I think he is the servant you sent for. The servant who was with Laius when he died. But the queen surely can best tell you.
Jocasta, you know the man we have sent for. Is it the same man?
Does it matter? Is it worthwhile probing into the past, defiling the present?
I must follow the clue to the end, to the heart of the labyrinth.
In God's name, I beg you, no. The gods keep you ignorant of who you are.
It is a matter of my honor, not of yours, Jocasta. If I am proved to be a bastard of a slave stock to the third generation, you are what you are. Your lineage is not brought low.
Don't do this, I beg you. Be persuaded by me.
I cannot. I must bring this whole thing to the light.
It is for your own good.
My own good? If ignorance is for my own good, then I want no more of my own good.
Oh, the gods help you. If you wish to live, do not go on like this. Have I not suffered enough?
Go, someone, bring this shepherd to me. As for our lady, the queen, leave her to bask in her pride of birth.
Lost. Condemned. What more can I say? Go forward to your damnation. There is no turning back now. I have no more words. I have spoken my last word.
Why, sir, does she go in this grief? She leaves us the thought of her silence. What wild beast will rush out of this silence?
Let it rush out. Let the silent world, silent too long, spew out its secrets. I must unlock this last door to the last room where I myself am lodged. I must look on myself. What I am, or may be, already shames her, the high-born woman. Let it come out. At worst, I am the son of the goddess Fortune. Who would not have such a mother? I'm kin to the seasons. Four-legged spring. Summer, upright in its pride. Tottering winter. I rise and fall and rise and fall with the rising and falling and rising year. This is my breed. I ask no other. I am not ashamed to ask who I am. I will know who I am.
The secret will out in the full moon. The secret of our master's birth. The earth will sound with it, and one spot of earth will be honored above any other. Cithaeron, mother to our king.
Was he begotten in a summer noon by Pan, lover of the mountains? Fountains, sacred to Apollo, saw the act of love, perhaps, between our god of the sun and some favored one of the daughters of Earth.
Did Bacchus rejoice at his birth, his wine-stained hands receiving him in joy from a nymph on Helicon?
Is this the man approaching? A stranger to me, but much of an age with this Corinthian messenger. Is it the man?
It is. Well known to us all. Laius Shepherd. Faithful in his service. A good man.
Now, sir, you are a friend of Corinth. Is this the one you spoke of?
This is the one. It has been many years, but this is the one.
Old Shepherd, look at me and listen. You were, I hear, a servant of King Laius.
Yes. A servant, but no slave. Reared in the king's own house.
You were always his shepherd.
Most of my life I tended the king's flocks.
In what part of the country?
Many parts.
Name one part.
Cithron. And the places near to Cithron.
And in Cithron you knew this man, did you?
Who? Him? I don't know. What was his trade?
Forget the trade. You had dealings with this man.
It's so long ago. I can't remember.
It is a long time ago, but don't you remember a shepherd neighbored on the slopes of Cithron? You had two flocks. I, one only. We had three seasons together, spring to fall. I would fold my flock in Corinth for the winter. You would drive yours to Thebes, to the steadings of King Laius. Surely you remember.
A long time ago. But it comes back a little.
Then perhaps you will remember the day you gave a child to me. A baby boy. To bring up as my own.
I don't know. I don't know what you mean. Why was I brought here?
To see that child. Or the man who was that child. Here he is. Here is your king.
Curse you, fool. Can't you hold your...
Come, he's spoken honestly. More honestly than you.
I've done nothing wrong. Why do you look at me as if I've
done...
It's
wrong not to answer a straight question. You were asked a straight question.
This one here knows nothing about it. Nothing about anything.
If you won't speak of your own free will, we must use pain to make you speak.
No. No. Leave me.
You gave a child to him. That child he spoke about.
All right. I did. And I wish to God I died the day I did.
You'll die now if you don't tell me the truth.
And if I do, I'll die. I'll die worse.
Come on, out with it. You're wasting time.
I said I gave it to him, didn't I? What more can I say?
Where did the child come from? Your home or someone else's?
It wasn't my child, if that's what you mean. It was another man's.
Whose?
Please, don't ask me any more. Please.
I'll drag the answer out with your tongue. Whose?
It was a child from the house of King Laius.
A slave or one of his own?
Must I say?
You must say. I must know.
It was his. It was his child. So they said, anyway. Your wife, the queen, I mean, could tell you more about it.
She gave it to you?
Yes, sir.
Why?
To do away with it.
To kill it? To kill her own child?
There was this evil spell put upon it, sir. She cried terribly. But there was this evil spell, you see.
What evil spell?
The child was going to kill his own father.
But the child was not destroyed. You disobeyed an order.
I couldn't do it, sir. Could you do it? Could anybody here?
I gave it to this one here, who's so high up now. I thought to myself, he comes from another country. He'll take him there, right over the hills, miles away. And now you're here. If it is you. If it is you. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
All out. Oozed out to the last drop. There's a sort of joy in it. No more. No more to fear. No more. Oh, what sin. Oh, what unspeakable. What filth. To see this in a mirror. The stain on the bed, the wound in the earth, festering. My children. My poor children. The light is stained. Never again. The last sunset. No more dawns, no noon. The light shall not be stained by my looking on it. There's a knife to be taken somewhere. Here? The fountain of seed? But I would still see. No. The light will look. The light shall not look. No. The light has seen enough.
Jocasta!
Here was a man the world called happy. Oedipus. Pattern of earthly happiness. Who, after this, can be called happy? Who would wish for happiness? Consider his life. Consider his deeds of heroism. He shot his arrow straight, favored by Zeus. He saw the Sphinx, foiled and cursing, choke in her own blood. He steered our ship. His arm was strong against disaster. Our hearts are torn with this story, with this sight of affliction unspeakable, for it is our affliction. We are all Oedipus. But to some, heaven is merciful, forbidding the unfolding of the pattern to the ultimate horror of the things we have seen. Time sees everything. Suffers everything, suffers what must now be inscribed forever on stone imperishable. Curse after curse, begetter and begotten cursed. Son of Laius, would to God I had never seen you, you who were my light. And must now be my darkness. Our king, stamped like ash into the earth.
But the story is stamped forever in our brains, in our books, in our very loins. It is woven into the light of the sky, beats in the blood of the yet unborn. Is with us, is with you. God forgive us all.
Citizens of Thebes.
My lord High Steward of the Court, we know. We've heard. You may spare yourself the distress of a formal announcement.
Heard? You cannot have heard. I have but just now.
There can be no new horror. We have tasted the last of its wine.
Our queen. Dead by her own hand. Note what I say. Preserve what happened before the horror rushes into full realization and makes me tongueless.
How?
She went raging into her bedroom. Fell screaming onto the marriage bed, tearing her hair, her very skin. Crying out the name of Laius. Cursing the bed in which she had brought forth children of her own child, she said. And then Oedipus entering, calling, begging for a sword to as he put it, blast to death the field of such foul sowing.
Give me a sword! Give me a sword!
Raving, seeking the queen, hammering on her door, wrenching the bolts from their sockets, falling into the room. There he sees, and we see from behind him.
Courage. Courage.
No! No!
Hanging from a roof beam, the rope twisted about her neck, her body circling.
No!
He cried out like a mad thing and used the sword to cut her down. But he was prevented from tearing in his passion what had no more life. For her to die once was enough. He ripped the very brooches from her robe, his hands and fists about them. For his own safety, he has been disarmed. His sword was taken, he's under guard. He claims his royal right, he says, to blazon the unclean thing that is himself before the eyes of the wronged. I came to warn you why he comes and of his manner of coming.
Let him be cursed. The man who sought to do good to a dying child, the life bringer. I should have died innocent. Here he is. Sons and daughters of Thebes, your shame. The author of your pestilence. Cithaeron, my foster mother, your wind should have blown chill on this body. Your snow should have buried it. You will remember. You will carry a curse in your stone, barren of grass, and your stunted trees. And you too, crossroad in the clearing. At least that forest has not been nourished by a father's blood spilt by his son's hand. But wayfarers will catch a shiver as of an evil memory, and death sits forever on the signpost. Now, let me be hidden from all eyes. Let me go hence. I am unworthy of death, the benison of innocent sufferers. Let me wander and keep my hell alive.
Oedipus, I must dispose all things under God. You must know that I have not come to gloat or reproach. Ask nothing yet. First, consider that it would be seemly to hide such grief from the generality. We must mourn in private.
Let me leave now, Creon. I do not wish to enter that house again that rang with laughter once and is now, through my doing, a house of death. Cast me out, or do worse or better.
The gods must instruct me. I await the word.
You were given the word. The god pronounced death on the defiler. Here he stands, though all unworthy of so light a sentence.
Death or banishment. We must await more guidance. A king is a king.
A queen, a queen. You, as her brother, will do what is fitting for her burial and the accompanying rites. As for me, I entreat you again, let me go. I will not quit the kingdom. I will return to the place my parents chose to be my deathbed, the mountain Cithaeron. I will wait there till death comes. As for my children, let the boys stay here in Thebes. They will do service in good time. But my daughters, girls who shared their father's cup, ate from his plate, what can become of them? What men will seek them? The god of marriage will turn his back. Let them be with their father.
Over your children, I must claim control. The disposal of their future is in my hands. Come. Let us go in.
One prayer at this shrine that saw so often a united family give praise and thanks. Let me go. A man can do no harm there.
Dark. Dark. The sun has burst there for the last time.
The world are out. The gods scream, finding poison in the wine cup. The mountains are molten. The sea, blood. The mounting moon turns her face away. Day will never return.
Thank you.
You come in some sort of rejoicing.
It is early to offer thanks in person to the king, but the god is always awake.
You've heard no news?
We live away. Little of the city's news reaches us, but we have good news of our own. A cow calves safely. We heard the crying of a newborn human child. The blight has lifted from one of our fields. It seems we are to be delivered from our afflictions. Praise to the gods. Praise also to the king. He has found a way.
What has happened to his eyes?
It is a long story. You will hear it someday. Creon has relented. Oedipus goes into exile with his daughters.
Who did it to him? He had only one enemy, and that was the Sphinx. But he killed the Sphinx.
Perhaps it was better to be killed by it. The riddle was not meant to be answered.
But he answered it. He saved us. That's the story we're told.
It is dangerous to answer riddles. But some men are born to answer them. It is the gods' doing. They hide themselves in riddles. We must not try to understand too much.
Why?
Citizens of Thebes, this was Oedipus, a man strong in war, gentle in peace. God gave him joy. God gave his loins increase. His happy lot was fire to the envious. But now the flutes are stilled, the trumpets cease. Misfortune's waves have crashed tumultuous over that head endowed with masteries. He yields to the destroyer's animus. A last day is reserved to all of us. Look to it always. Human happiness is not for human error to assess. Call no man happy till his days surcease. Till all the gods of pain declare release. Fate turns her back upon his obsequies, and happiness may rest with him in peace.
Oedipus was played by Christopher Eccleston, Jocasta by Adjoa Ando, Creon by Don Warrington, and First Elder by John Shrapnel. Second Elder and Tiresias were played by Fiona Shaw, Third Elder and Old Shepherd by Vincent Ibrahim, and the Messenger, Officer and Other Elder were Daryl De Silva. The Child was played by Katie Kemp Riley. Oedipus the King was written by Sophocles and translated and adapted by Anthony Burgess. It was accompanied by music composed by Stanley Silverman, performed by the BBC Philharmonic Orchestra and Cantos Chamber Choir, conducted by Clark Rundell. The producers were Polly Thomas and Eloise Whitmore. It was a Naked production for BBC Radio 3.
This week's editions of The Essay here on BBC Radio 3 are also part of our Burgess at 100 season. That begins tomorrow night at 10:45. Meanwhile, you can find more editions of Drama on 3 to listen to on our website. And next Sunday night, a troubled Liverpool family is at the heart of our drama, The American Grandmother by David Parnell. That's at the same time, 9 o'clock.
As Scandinavia emerges from the darkness of winter,
Radio 3 in Concert has music from Finland and Denmark. Nielsen depicts a sea voyage in An Imaginary Journey to the Faroe Islands, whilst Sibelius's thrilling portrait of the fabled Finnish hero, Lemminkainen, contains some of his most atmospheric music. The BBC Symphony Orchestra, conducted by their Finnish chief conductor, Sakari Oramo, live from the Barbican, next Friday evening at 7:30 on BBC Radio 3.
This Sunday night, it's just after 11:15, and time for this week's edition of Early Music Late, introduced by Simon Hayes.
Tonight, we're at the Stockholm Early Music Festival for a concert given by one of the most distinguished ensembles in the field, Consensus Musicus Wien, founded by the late Nikolaus Arnenkor in 1953. They're taking us on a journey through Baroque Austria, beginning with music by Johann Heinrich Schmelzer, one of the most important composers working at the Habsburg court during the mid-17th century. As a violinist, he was praised by one of his contemporaries as the famous and nearly most distinguished violinist in all Europe. I love the nearly, but I'm sure he didn't take offence, because Schmelzer actually seems to have been just as interested in composing as he was in playing. And he published several groundbreaking collections of chamber music during the 1660s, as well as writing a vast amount of ballet music for the court entertainments of Emperor Leopold I. We begin with Schmelzer's lament on the death of Leopold's predecessor, the Emperor Ferdinand III, who died in 1657. The opening section of the lament, lasting 49 bars, symbolises his age and is followed by an imitation of tolling bells, a fugue, and a final magisterial saraband. After the lament, Schmelzer's most famous work, The Fencing School, named after its penultimate movement, where the sword play of a fencing master is depicted by the virtuoso bowmanship of the violinist. It ends with a reflective movement in which the players of Consensus